and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm just recovering from a slightly embarrassing moment.
Oh, good. This will make good content for the podcast. What's happened?
Well, I was taking my godson to the train station this morning, and I needed to ensure that he got on a certain carriage on a certain train. So I wanted to make sure I was on the platform with him. Right, so I went to the woman at the ticket office and I said, do I need a... Because in the old days you could get like a platform ticket.
Okay.
And I think it was more for, I suppose, if you were a train spotter or whatever, if you weren't actually travelling but you needed to get on the platform, you could buy a platform ticket. So I said to her, I just need to make sure I'm on the platform, I'm not actually getting on a train, do I need a platform ticket? She went, oh no, you don't get a platform ticket. And I went, oh, is there any way I can be let through the barrier? And she said, well, the problem is, and I was starting to get a little bit annoyed because I thought, well, you're going to charge me like the price of a train ticket just to get on the fucking platform. So I was already, not for a row because I don't do that, but I was already, I could feel the hackles going up. And she said, there is a cost to get on the platform. So I'm thinking, oh, okay. And she said, you have to sing. And I said, excuse me? She said, oh yeah, to get on the platform, you have to sing a song.
Trev, I think she might be taking the piss out of you, mate.
So I said, oh, okay, any particular song? And she said, yes, you are my sunshine. And I looked at her to think, yes, she's obviously having a laugh here, but she also had that look of someone saying, come on then.
And then, really?
And he said, I'm waiting for the first note. And so I did sing the first line of You Are My Sunshine through that really crappy microphone they have at the ticket office. But I did it really quietly, you know, like when you are my sunshine. And she thought it was fucking hilarious.
She's just ritually humiliated you at a busy train station.
Well, it wasn't busy, thank goodness. I don't think, my God, so he was sort of not standing near me, so I don't think he was aware, because imagine...
Well, he lost all respect for you immediately.
Well, I think he lost all respect for me a long time ago, but but imagine if you're 14 and Uncle Trev is taking you to the train station, which is why I couldn't sing too loudly, because I thought, I don't want him hearing me. Imagine if I'd gone, you are my sunshine, really gone for it. Anyway, they let me through. It was fine.
So surely, though, I mean, if you go onto the platform without a ticket and you board a train,
yeah,
then you're the one committing a crime. So at that point, they should be able to charge you or fine you or whatever.
Oh, yeah, obviously, if I got on a train, yeah.
So... why couldn't they have just let you through without having to sing for your supper?
Well, they did let me through in the end. I think the whole singing thing was her having a bit of fun. And why not have a bit of fun when you're at work? Being in the ticket office at a railway station must be one of the most thankless tasks of all. And I would imagine, I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but I think I probably made her day.
Well, this is the thing. You've got to be careful with these jokes, because you could have been, you know, guiding your godson to a train to go to a funeral or something. It could have been a terrible day in your family's life.
I know.
And this idiot is thinking, I'll make him sing for my own amusement.
No, it worked, though. She got a little tune out of me, just a little, you know, sort of mumbling tune. She had fun. As I came back up off the platform, because I had to be let through again, but that was the chap at the barriers who let me through. But I did wave at her as I left and went, thank you. And I could just see in her face, you know, my day isn't as bad as it could have been because I've made that dickhead sing.
I think you shouldn't have gone along with the song. I think you should have sung something like Rage Against the Machine, Killing in the Name Of, give her a blast of fuck you, I won't do what you tell me.
Well, I wouldn't have known the lyrics. I mean, at least I knew the opening line to your... I did think, how much of that song do I know? How long do I need to sing for to be able to... Because, you know, you'd do anything for your godson, right? So if to make sure he gets on the right train involves singing a verse of You Are My Sunshine, but imagine if she'd picked a song I knew I'd not heard of.
Well, imagine if she'd really gone for the complete humiliation and said, right, I want you to do I'm a Little Teapot with the actions, please.
Well, I don't think I would have done that. You know, I do have a line drawn in the sand. singing a quick line from You Are My Sunshine, fine. But if there was actions involved, that's not happening.
Where's your handle? Now where's your spout? Come on. Dance, monkey, dance.
Anyway, I got on the platform for free. So fuck you, Southern Rail.
Well, well done. By the way, well done you looking after your godson like that, because you've done the same thing for me before.
I don't think I've sung at a train station for you before.
You haven't sung at a train station, but you have looked after me and made sure I got on the right train.
Yeah. I mean, you weren't 14. You were, what, mid-20s, maybe even early 30s, and you were on completely the wrong train. I think you would have ended up in Bedfordshire.
Yeah. I can't remember exactly where I was going. I was trying to meet you in Victoria, and I think I was going to end up in Cambridge or Bedfordshire or
somewhere. Yeah, you were going nowhere near Victoria.
And you very quickly had to say, Ben, I think you're on the wrong train, mate. Get off at the next available stop.
You don't really have, having known you for quite a while now, you don't really have a nose for travelling.
Oh no, God no.
Not on public transport anyway. I think you're probably very good in the car because you've done a lot of driving for work. So I think you're very, in a car, you know where you're going. But I think public transport, if you don't mind me saying, it seems a bit of a step beyond for you.
Yeah, I can navigate myself in a car quite well, but when it comes down to understanding bus timetables and routes and maps and
tube lines, I mean,
I'm lost.
No idea with tube lines, have you?
Oh, no. It's actually amazing. I'm in awe of you when I go anywhere in London with you, and you just know not only what tube line is what colour, but where they all go and how they connect up and what time we need to swap platforms. I think it's like some sort of magic trick you're doing.
It's just living and working in London for so many years, you just get used to it. It's just one of the things. I guess you've never really had to do it on a daily basis until we worked together in London. Then you had to travel eventually by train, but yours was fairly straightforward, I think, wasn't it? One train, pretty much.
Yes, it was one train from East Grinstead where I live.
Yeah.
All I had to do was remember what stop to get off at. That was pretty much it.
Thank God it was no more than that. Otherwise, I think we would have been sacked sooner sooner than we were.
Well, good on you for being the sort of guardian of the train passengers. It's very good of you, even though you were humiliated by that horrible woman at Southern Rail.
I thought she was lovely. And the only thing I did think is, what if she's got the capacity behind that glass to transmit the sound from the passenger microphone, i.e. mine, to the platform?
Oh, you'd be singing over the tannoy.
Yeah, because, you know, like, I mean, obviously a lot of the messages are now pre-recorded, but they must have the ability to go live to the platform saying, ladies and gentlemen, the 8:53 has been cancelled. Got to be able to do that. And imagine if she just thought, fuck this, he's actually singing. Everyone on the platform needs to hear this. And there would have been this really tinny, dreadful sound. It would almost be like some sort of dreadful horror movie, you know, where there's singing, almost hypnotic singing coming through the tannoy system.
I think she could have done one better. She could have broadcast you to the station, and then as you walk down the ramp to guide your godson onto the right train, she could have said, as you're walking down, and now approaching the platform, ladies and gentlemen, the star of the song, the lead singer, here he is, give him a round of applause. Because otherwise you were just sort of faceless voice.
I mean, I could have done, you know, like when you walk down the stairs to the platform, imagine if she'd like announced, I could have done like one of those showbiz dances down the stairs. You know, like Morecambe and Wise used to do that sort of, if only you'd had a cane and a top hat, I could have done a whole show at the station.
That'd be great. Or you could have done the old Brucey sort of muscle pose sort of silhouette thing. That'd have been brilliant.
Yeah, could have done that.
Well, I'm glad you made somebody's day, even though it feels like it was at your expense.
Yeah, well, I'll take it on the chin. Took one for the team. No harm done. Anyway, how's your week?
Well, speaking of taking one on the chin, I very much have, and I'm not happy about it, because actually, my week, I've just learned this morning, is going very badly.
Why?
I am the victim of crime.
Well, it can't be that terrible a crime, because you don't sound too shaken up. You've not sort of phoned me before the recording and said, I'm traumatised, Trev. I've fallen foul of a criminal. I can't record. I've got to go to the police station. I've got to sort it all out. So I think I'll be the judge of what sort of level of crime has been committed against
you. By the way, way to take the wind out of the sails of the bit. I'm trying to build up tension here that I've been the victim of a crime, and you've completely taken the air out of my tyres for this next anecdote.
Well, inflate me.
So I will apologise in advance because I know in recent weeks I've been wanging on a bit too much about the supermarkets.
Oh my God, we're not going on about the supermarkets again.
I know you're getting a little bit sick of it, but I can't not mention it because I was the victim of a crime at my local supermarket.
Okay. I'm assuming this is you've either been pickpocketed or somebody swiped something from your trolley, or somebody has somehow got you to pay for their goods. They're the only crimes I can imagine, unless someone has assaulted you. Maybe, oh, have you been assaulted in the condiments aisle?
No. I have paid for someone else's shopping, and I have been swindled. You are correct with those assumptions. I did my little shop this week on a Sunday as we record, try and get some of my little ingredients for the week ahead's little lunches. So I can put them in my little lunchbox.
Oh, you're like a little old lady getting all
your, I know.
Oh, getting me bits ready for the week.
And I've been saving up my Nectar points, which is a bit of a clue as to which supermarket I'm in, for about 2 to 3 years. Yeah, I haven't accumulated a fortune. It was about 70, 80 quid. Okay. So not a ton, but a nice little bit that I was squirreling away, and I decided to think, I'll use it for this Christmas.
Nice.
So imagine my horror when I get to the self-checkout, pay for today's goods. Today wasn't going to be the big Christmas shop. That was going to be next week.
Right.
I hit print receipt.
Can I just say, stand by for next week's podcast, people. It's going to be a belter. Ben's doing his Christmas shopping.
It's another supermarket story, people. And I see at the bottom of my receipt what my Nectar points are worth, about £2.50.
Well, where's the 80 quid gone?
So I pulled over one of the members of staff.
Oh, pulled them over. This, you got, sounds like you got a little bit aggressive.
Oh, yeah. I went into, where's my money? You know, because this is no good.
Yeah.
Something's gone wrong. And a young lady was very helpful, very friendly, very nice, and apologetic, even though I'm assuming it wasn't him who'd done it. He basically said, unfortunately, sir, because, you know, I command a certain level of respect in East Grinstead.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, sir, there is a lot of Nectar card fraud going on.
Oh.
It would appear someone has spent all of your Nectar points and all of your money.
How? How can that happen?
Well, this is exactly my point, because he said, phone them up, which you can't do on a Sunday, I've learned, and explain what's happened. Likelihood is they'll issue you a new card, because there's no point in you keeping the same card now, because some scammer knows that it works, so they'll just rinse it again. So they'll issue you a new card, and they will refund your points. So that, and I said, but just to clarify, how am I going to prove to the people on the phone at Nectar that I wasn't the one who spent them?
Yeah, good point.
And he said, oh, well, you'll probably find that they've been spent in a store absolutely miles away.
Okay.
I said, okay, fair enough. And I said, do you have any idea how this has been done? And he said, people will just blindly spam the sort of checkout controllers when you scan your barcode for the Nectar, because you can't enter it manually.
Right.
So people will just apparently just smash in random digits until they get a working one. And apparently someone's come across my digits, my 70 quid, my 70, 80 quid, and they've treated themselves to my Christmas dinner.
Wow, that's amazing, really, that someone is just putting random numbers in. How many numbers are needed for the Nectar card to become active? Because I must admit, I'm not very good with these loyalty cards. I think I've got a Nectar card, but it always seems such a faff to me. Now you've talked about like 80 quid on it, I'm starting to think I've been missing out here. That's a big old lot of cash you can save. So how many numbers are needed?
When you pick up the gun for the self-service thing and you hit into put in your own Nectar number, I have an 11-digit code memorized that I put in.
11 digits?
Yeah. I mean, I might as well tell you what it is now, because I've already been scammed. But on a serious note, it really kind of annoyed me, not for myself, because I'm fairly sure that this is not a big end-of-the-world problem for me. I wasn't doing my big Christmas shop at the time, but I did think, imagine the person who might not have had any money in their bank account, who has set out to do their Christmas shop, who has been relying on that buildup of Nectar points over the year, and some thief has absolutely swindled them, and they might not realise until they get to the till to pay for their big Christmas shop.
Yes.
I got home and I was quite cross about this, because I was thinking about this sort of fictitious poor old dear in my head who was, you know, now having to go hungry over Christmas and not have any food. and that I thought, well, I'll be okay, but this might have swindled some nice old deer. And I relayed the story to Mrs. Ben, who was sympathetic, but she then said, oh, well, it's a bit of a sign of the times, isn't it, that some poor person's having to resort to doing this to steal your nectar points to pay for their dinner. I thought, don't you sympathise with my thief. You sympathise with me, not the criminal.
The thing about this is it's almost the perfect crime, isn't it? There's no way that they're going to catch the person. I mean, the police aren't going to put any resources into this low-level crime. It's just not worth their while. Sainsbury's or other supermarkets with a similar problem aren't going to really do anything about it because they can't presumably stop this happening.
No.
So it's almost the perfect crime.
As you say, the police absolutely will not give a shit about this. They've got bigger, more important fish to fry at the moment. Sainsbury's themselves, I imagine, can locate where and when all these points were spent in bulk. They can probably find out what store and what time. But then are they going to really send in a detective to analyse the CCTV footage to try and track for 70 quid? Fuck no, are they?
No, no, of course not.
But the other thing as well is that I've just realised next year, after I've accumulated a few more points, I might take a trip up to Northampton. I might get you to send me on a train to Northampton because I'm going the right way.
I better get someone to meet you the other end.
I'll spend all my Sainsbury's points, do a big shop, come back to East Grinstead, phone up Nectar, tell them I've been ripped off again, get it refunded. I could be a criminal mastermind.
What, are they going to refund you?
Yes.
Oh, they are going to refund you?
Well, I've been assured, if I ask nicely and sort of explain the situation, that I should get my nectar points restored.
Right.
But this is why I'm not too bothered at the moment, because I'm under the advice that I'll be okay. Come next week, I might be kicking off. It might be supermarket debacle part two.
Well, stand by, people. Ben, apart from visits to the supermarket, visits to supermarkets that will be opening soon, how else do you spend your spare time? That seems to be, it's become a bit of a hobby of yours, the whole supermarket thing. I think probably even unknowingly to yourself, the whole supermarket obsession has turned into a pastime for you.
I still play as a man in my mid approaching late 30s, I still play a lot of video games, and I don't care.
A lot of grown-ups play video games now. I was playing some video games with my godson, and the problem is, because I don't play anything in between his visits, I don't improve in any of the games.
Oh.
So I feel I've now got to the point where probably playing with me, I mean, it's fine because he does his own thing. You know, we tend to play Mario Kart, and you know, he does his own thing, and he'll be racing against all the other, you know, the computer cars, I suppose, let's call them. So he's not really racing against me, but I do feel, you know, I don't know if anyone knows Mario Kart. It is about the only video game I know. But at the end of a race, when everyone else has finished, the music sort of slows down. It's almost like someone's whistling a tune as I have to go around the final lap on my own, still falling off things, still crashing into things. It's fine. I don't mind it. But for me, the video game thing has never, I've never taken it to my heart.
Well, I recognise that some people might see it as a bit of a childish hobby, and that's fine, but I also don't really understand people who enjoy train spotting or bus spotting or anything. But I recognise, you know, live and let live, that's your thing. If that's what you enjoy doing, who am I to judge?
But exactly, and I've often thought, and I'm sure I've talked about this before, but you see, I don't really have any hobbies. I think doing a podcast might just about sort of fall under the banner of having a hobby. It's, we do it for fun. We don't make any money out of this. It's just for fun. So I guess this is a hobby, but I don't really have any other hobbies.
You know, you like your gritty crime dramas. That's could be considered a hobby.
I don't know whether watching telly should really be seen as a hobby. I think being in front of the telly, I enjoy that immensely. I'm at my happiest when I'm just sitting in front of the telly. But it's not really a hobby, is it? You know when you watch, like, the chase. And they always have that little chat with a contestant. And they say, so Rob, you're from Northampton. Brilliant. Can you meet Ben at the station in a couple of weeks? That'd be really helpful. Well, what do you do when you're not working? And they always say, you know, I go tobogganing. Or, you know, they've always got some extreme thing. Or they do lots of travelling. And I something, if I went on the chase, they said, what do you do in your spare time? I watch crime dramas. I mean, I think they just cut that out.
I think so. You might have to, they might urge you to lie, come up with a more exciting life.
You do wonder how many contestants lie about their hobbies, because I can't believe everyone can do those things all the time. You go, well, you know, I like to go bungee jumping at the weekends, or, you know, all those sorts of things. So anyway, I thought maybe the time is coming where I do need to find a new hobby, something else that I can do in my spare time, that maybe I can find a new passion. I think as I've got older, Ben, my passion for most things has dwindled, and I'd quite like to find that passion for something again. You know, when you're younger, I mean, do you still get excited if a new video game comes out and it's one, like, do you still feel that excitement and then the passion that you want to complete it? Or I'm guessing you still have to complete video games. I don't know whether, or are they now endless because they're online and they're just continually updating and there's new levels all the time?
The short answer is it's a variation of both. Some of them are endless, some of them are finite and can be completed. It's a very wide spectrum.
Okay, but do you still get that passion? Do you still feel that passion and excitement for video games?
If there's a game I like, I will not rest until I have beaten everything possible within it.
Okay. So anyway, I was Googling this week ideas for new hobbies, and I just wanted to run a few by you to see if there's any of these you think maybe I should take up as a new hobby for 2025.
Okay, so I've got to, surely you should be the one deciding if this suits you.
Well, I don't know which one to go for.
Okay, well, let's run through a few.
Obviously, on the list is train spotting, which you've mentioned already. I don't think that's ever going to be my thing. I know people that train spot and they love it, and that's absolutely fine. I think it's really harsh, as you were saying earlier, I think it's really harsh for people just to damn somebody or damn their hobby. Well, you know, at least they're doing something. At least they're enjoying themselves and getting something out of it. But I just can't see it being the hobby for me. The other one that came up, which is a fairly well-known thing, but people do, extreme ironing.
This just seems like... This seems like doing something for the sake of it, really.
Well, the problem with me doing that hobby is I don't iron, full stop.
No.
I've not ironed a shirt in about 30 years. I don't see the point of ironing. To me, I'm going to put the shirt on, it's going to crinkle anyway. It's such a waste of time ironing. I've never understood it. So I've probably most of my adult life, I've not owned an iron or an ironing board. And no one has at any point said to me, Trev, that shirt looks a bit crumpled. I wouldn't care less if he did anyway. So the fact that it's a thing I don't do, and then having to take that to the extremes, like underwater or high up, high altitude, I can't see me doing that either, because I'm not really... I don't think I'm made for the extreme side of hobbies, like bungee jumping, skydiving, any of that stuff. That just wouldn't be for me.
No, I mean, doing something you find boring already in a more complicated than necessary situation doesn't seem worth it to me. So I think we can skip the train spotting, and I think I'm saying no to extreme ironing as well.
Okay, here's another one. It's called Hikaru Dorodango. Well, I mean, it's got a great name.
It sounds fun.
It may not be as fun as it sounds. It basically
what is it?
Polishing dirt.
Oh, what a letdown.
Essentially, you make a ball of mud, you draw the moisture out of it whilst coating it with fine and finer grains of soil, and then you work the dirt by hand, polishing it to a high gloss sphere.
To what end?
It's sort of making art, isn't it?
So you end up with this shiny ball of shit.
Yeah, dirt. Yeah. I mean, I've got a picture in front of me. They look shiny. They're spherical. They're little balls of dirt. They're shiny. You know when people like do painting? I mean, I'm not artistic at all. I wish I was. I wish I could paint or draw, and I can't. Because when people say, oh, it's so therapeutic, painting, maybe this is a similar thing. It's therapeutic. You don't think about anything else other than polishing the ball.
Well, you might not be naturally gifted, as some people are, to be able to put pen or brush to paper or canvas and then come up with something brilliant. But like most things, if you practice it and learn it, then you'll probably improve really quickly. So
I think you need a natural aptitude for art. I'm not sure you can learn art.
Really?
I think you can be taught some of the basics, but I don't think, if you haven't got it, any natural ability, and I genuinely have not. I did art GCSE and I couldn't do anything. I was so bad at it. I was hoping I'd be better at it, and because I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But all the, any fun was very quickly sapped out by the teacher, who gave you no encouragement. That you'd hope, even if you're shit at something, a teacher would try and, you know, nurture the passion for it. Even if you weren't very good, you could say, well, you know, maybe you could have taught me some techniques, but I went to a school where teaching wasn't that high on the priority, really. So there was no teaching of any techniques. And then I did one bit of work, and I mean, it was terrible, but rather than say to me, oh, why don't you maybe try this, or maybe you could attempt that, he just went, well, that's crap, isn't it? Oh. Thank you, sir.
Just to follow your own line of logic, do you consider podcasting or broadcasting an art form on its own?
It's an art form, I suppose.
So does that mean, by your own logic, that you and I have the flair for podcasting?
Well, I think based on the listening numbers, probably not. Which is why it's a hobby. Rather than anything serious. It's not a profession.
So I think I have to let you decide on how interested you're going to be spending hours of your precious life basically forming balls of dirt with your bare hands. I'm going to let you decide if you want to do that.
Yeah, I don't think it's for me. I think I'd get pretty bored of that pretty quickly. I think after the first couple of balls, I mean, I've made a couple of balls now. I mean, what next? Oh, another ball. And then what are you going to do with them? You can't just keep them on. Like, it's not even something you can put on display. Like when people come round, you know, you go, oh, would you like to see my collection of mud balls? Like, people will be interested. And even if they were to start with, just out of politeness, go, oh, yes. After about the third ball, am I describing what soil I've used? Am I going into where's the interest for anyone else?
I think we're right to knock this hobby on the head. So that's three we've rejected straight away. This isn't very promising. What have we got next?
Naval fluff collecting.
No, pass.
Now, people do this, though, don't they? They collect, and they put it in little tubes. Yeah, because it's fascinating. I mean, I guess the thing about naval fluff is it is fascinating. It's amazing where the fluff collects and where it's collected from. I mean, I think it's amazing that fibres from, like, your underwear almost climb up and go into... I saw that on a programme once. They said, you know, basically fibres from your underwear sort of climb up the hairs on your belly and end up in your belly button. And I think, well, that's interesting at least, isn't it?
No, it's not interesting. And I don't know what you're planning to do with all of this disgusting fluff that you've picked out of your belly button.
It would be helpful, you know, for crime analysis. I mean, imagine if I got
what crimes are you committing?
Well, imagine if I'd managed to get the naval fluff from the nectar card fiend. Imagine if there were little clues in the belly button fluff of mastermind nectar card criminal.
Yeah, like we could find the sort of crumbs of bread in his belly button and link them to the type of loaf he normally likes to buy.
Yes, exactly. It could be brilliant. So, I mean, I can't say, I mean, I don't think, again, just collecting your own naval fluff, would you want to collect other, I don't know how weird that would be. If I phoned you up, Ben, and said, can I have your naval fluff for the week because I'm collecting it, I think that would put me in the sort of psychopath category, yeah. Potential serial killer category.
Yes, my next phone call would be to the people with the big butterfly net to come and catch you, I think.
All right, so maybe not naval fluff collecting.
What have we got next?
And this is another collecting one. I think this is a bit of a throwback. I'm not sure this would be a good hobby to do now. Milk bottle collecting.
You can still have milk delivered, can't you?
Yeah, but does it not just come in like a plastic thing now, like all milk does. I mean, in the old days, I remember my old friend from primary school, he did collect milk bottles for a while, but that was in the days where the milkman would come and you'd often get different types of milk bottles. You know, they might be promoting something else on it, or they'd, I always remember one he had that had like the sun on it. It was like bright orange sun painted on the glass bottle, you know. So I think it, back in the day, that would have been interesting. I think milk bottles, do they really exist in that? I bet in parts of the country they still do, but in London, I'm not sure. Even if you still had a milkman, you would get an interesting array of milk bottles.
Well, no, and also the problem with your newfound hobby in milk bottle collecting is that they tend to leave them on your doorstep. And yes, we've learned over the last few months that your doorstep
might be covered in shit before you know it.
It's a zone of chaos. So yeah, I wouldn't drink that milk even if the lid was still sealed shut.
I sort of missed the day of the milkman, right? We had a milkman who did the rounds in my area when I was a kid. He was around for years. His name was Arthur, right? Lovely old fella. He used to, when it was time every week to come and collect the money, particularly from my aunt and uncle, it would be the last on his run, and he'd come in the house, they'd have a long chat, he'd have a glass of whiskey with me uncle, and it was like all part of the community. The whole thing about the milkman, you knew who he was. I remember going to school and he'd go by, you'd hear that electric vehicle, you know, that milk float, you'd hear that noise and you'd go, "Hello, Arthur," and you'd go, "Hello," and it was all very nice. You'd hear the clinking of the glass bottles in the morning. There was also the jeopardy that the birds might pierce through the gold top.
Yeah. So can I say, were they deducting Arthur's whiskey drink, his weekly whiskey drink, from their bill? Because a glass of whiskey a week for a year, that's going to add up. And also, not to mention the drink driving element to this.
Well, you
story.
Do wonder how many other houses he was going into and having a glass of whiskey. I mean, he was probably absolutely shit-faced on payday.
It's
thank
a good
God
job
they don't go beyond about 20 miles an hour. They're cooking carnage otherwise. But no, Arthur was a good bloke, you know. He was a nice bloke. He did it for years. He sort of missed that. It's a bit like the old lollipop lady. We used to have a lollipop lady called Ethel, and I used to be terrified of her. She was
these are definitely names of a certain generation.
I mean, but this was in the 80s, and she must have been in about her 80s at the time. And she terrified me, because she, even though she wasn't the lollipop lady anymore, she'd been retired for years, she still shout at people at the crossing. I mean, she was a terrifying lady.
Oh, wow.
But you sort of miss it. Once she went, you know, there was no one replaced her on that crossing. You know, there was never a new lollipop lady or man on that crossing.
I work next to a primary school, and I never see a lollipop person.
Do they not have one?
No.
I mean, they don't. There's a school around the corner from me where that level cross, where if Ethel was around today, she'd be having kittens. There's no lollipop lady or man on her crossing when there's now a school there. There never used to be. Now there is. She'd be going mental.
So after she retired, she was still shouting at the kids?
Well, she just seemed to shout at everyone and anything. I'm sure she would just shout at cars. Or, you know, she was very odd. She was a very odd lady.
Did they have to sort of forcibly wrestle her lollipop from her? You've been stripped, Ethel, of your lollipop.
I don't think anyone was dead taking it from her. She was terrifying. Well, maybe she wasn't, though. Like, as a kid, you know, it's like some people are terrified you as a child. Like, maybe she wasn't that scary. But to me, I remember her coat. She used to have this long coat, and it was covered in badges. You know, like, you get that sort of eccentric sort of older lady or man. They're covered in badges.
Yes, yeah.
And that was Ethel. That was covered in badges. Like, you'd hear her coat before you saw her. You know what I mean? The rattling of badges from the next street. You go, it gave you time to get out of the way. Ethel's coming. But I was terrified of her. But she probably wasn't that scary, because she actually was probably caring about the kids crossing the road rather than, you know, having a go at people. But I was always scared that she was going to shout at me. I think
so. What about that as a new hobby, being a volunteer lollipop person?
Well, I don't think there's the opportunities now.
Do we have to say lollipop person? I don't want to offend anyone.
Well, just say lollipop man or woman.
I suppose you've got to
say person, because all right, say lollipop person.
I know. I mean, who'd have thought the woke agenda would get to the lollipop people?
And they wouldn't be called lollipop people now anyway. They'd be called like road crossing officers, or they'd have some weird name, you know.
What did they sing?
Automobile stoppage officers or something.
What did they sing in The Wizard of Oz? Was it the... Was it Willy Wonka? What did the Oompa Loompa sing? Was it the Lollipop Guild? Or was that the Munchkins from The Wizard of Oz?
I have no idea what you're talking about now. The Lollipop Guild?
Wasn't that from The Wizard of Oz? Did the Munchkins sing about We Are the Lollipop Guild?
I've never seen The Wizard of Oz.
I'm going to have to look it up now.
It's definitely not in Willy Wonka, because I've seen that. There's not a song about lollipops as far as I remember. I've not seen The Wizard of Oz, so I don't know.
Yes, it's from the Wizard of Oz, and I think the Munchkins at some point sing about they are the Lollipop Guild.
Wow.
I mean, I don't even know if the Munchkins are PC by today's standards.
I'm not sure. I mean, I've not seen it. Are they ridiculed in the...
I don't really Wizard remember, other than they sing a nice song about being from the Lollipop Guild.
Right. What is the Lollipop Guild? Because that sounds like some, like the Freemasons for lollipop people. Is that, do you have to belong to the Lollipop Guild? Do you have to go and some initiation ceremony that involves you licking a lollipop that's attached to a swinging rope?
Maybe that's what all Ethel's badges were. She was the leader of the Lollipop Guild.
She was. She was head lollipop.
I blame myself for this tangent, and I have to stop talking about it because I don't know any more about it, and I could be digging us a big hole.
So, well, there we go. Well, are we decided that milk bottle collecting wouldn't be that much of a hobby? Certainly where I live. I think all I'd be collecting is plastic containers.
Yeah, but let's not rule out volunteer lollipop person.
Okay. Competitive dog grooming.
I don't know how that would work.
Well, you groom a dog and you put it in for a competition, presumably.
I sort of imagine there'll be two people trying to out-groom the other one's dog somehow.
Well, I don't think that's how one side, you take one side, someone takes the other side of the dog.
No, we both get a spaniel each, and whoever gives it the floofiest tail wins. I don't know.
Well, I think it's that sort of thing, you know, like some people really go for it and they have the fur coloured, and it's all, as you say, it's all kind of poofed up, things are shaved into the fur. I've got a picture in front of me of I think it's some sort of poodle that is a mixture of pink, blue, green. It seems to have some sort of, I think it looks like a hammerhead shark shaved into its side of its fur. It's got bright orange sort of hair, for want of a better phrase, bright pink tail.
Right.
So those are the sort of standards you've got to go for if you're going to go in for the competitive dog grooming hobby.
It sounds like it's I mean, you're not going to forget that dog. It's very brightly coloured.
And let's face it, if you saw that dog, you'd be mightily impressed. Who groomed that, you'd probably ask. Well, followed by why.
But I don't think you're a big dog lover, are you?
I love dogs, but again, the only thing I'd say about that is I think you probably need some sort of artistic temperament and ability to be able to create art on a dog's fur. But I mean, imagine if you gave me a pair of clippers and a dog, it would be a carnage.
Okay.
The dog would probably be mainly bald with just tufts of hair on. And I'd have to say I'm recreating a lost land of the Incas or something.
Yeah. It might be a bit of a stretch. I think though we've established that your artistic flair does just about stretch to being able to produce a podcast. So you could do a dog cast, which is just you talking to a dog for 90 minutes a week.
Okay. I mean, will the dog react at all?
You can train dogs to bark.
Yeah, but that's not really a conversation. Because there are podcasts where people go out walking with their dogs, isn't there?
Yes, I think there is one called The Dog Walk.
I think, is it Emily Dean does one where she meets people with dogs, famous people, and they go for a walk and they talk as they walk the dog. So, but they're not talking to the dog.
It's a mischance.
Adam Buxton talks to his dog at the start of his podcast.
Rosie the dog, yeah, Rosie, and she occasionally talks back.
So maybe that's something I could do. I do remember years ago when I was the voice of the Streatham Common dog show.
And, yes, the and, dizzying heights of our showbiz career.
They didn't have dog grooming, but they had the dog fancy dress.
Yeah.
So maybe that's where I'd fare better. Maybe putting animals in fancy dress. That could be a hobby.
It could be, but then you know that you need to feed it, walk it, care for it, and yeah. do all that other stuff.
Well, not always. I mean, there's lots of, like, you know, if you ever go to, like, old museums in little villages, they've often got where some bloke in the 1900s dressed up hamsters, dead hamsters, ooh. And put them in positions like a little scene. So, you know, maybe you could do that. You know, like, do you remember when I had to deal with those two dead foxes in my parents' garden?
Yeah.
Well, maybe rather than disposing of them in the way that I had to, what if I'd kept them and dressed them up in different clothing and took pictures of them, put them online? Who knows what could have come of that?
I quite like this idea. What do you call it? I forget the word. What do you call it when you stuff an animal?
Taxidermy.
Taxidermy, thank you. Mm. So what if we get animals and we'll, you know, for ethical reasons, we'll have to insist that they've died of natural causes and we haven't slaughtered them. We'll have them all taxidermied and we'll have them recreating famous film scenes.
Nice.
So we could have a couple of hamsters doing a scene from Pulp Fiction.
What, the dance routine?
Yeah.
Yes.
Be great. People like would that. Love that.
Yeah.
Movie-themed taxidermy.
Send any dead pets to the Trevor Ben podcast via... You work in the postal service, Ben. It's probably easier if we have them sent to your place first.
can we wait a couple of months? It's kind of our busy period during December. I don't have time after for Christmas, corpses there'll be a lot, in the mail.
But after Christmas, there'll be a lot of dogs available. No, it's not just for Christmas, remember. It's for life.
Yes, get so put down that canvas bag. Forget that canal. Send them to us.
Right, a couple of other hobbies. Two more to finish with. Faking your own death. I'm not sure that's a hobby.
A hobby?
You can only really do that once, can't you?
That's really on your list of hobbies, faking your own death.
There's a guy called Chuck Lamb, who's better known as the dead body guy. Apparently he wants to be an actor, but unlike most aspiring actors, he was able to admit to himself that he wasn't very good at speaking roles, so he went for non-speaking roles, which are normally the roles of corpses. And he now regularly posts stage photos of his death, and it's got him a small career as a horror icon, apparently.
That makes a lot more sense now you've explained faking your own death as a hobby. Yes.
I could do that. That could be something I every day do a little shot of me faking my own death in a different way.
So you'd like to be sort of an extra slash actor who specifically plays corpses?
I think I'd get bored of that very quickly, though. I think that would bore me. Like, you know, once you've played dead twice, you've done it all, haven't you, really?
Well, the difficulty I've always thought about playing a corpse would be you've got to really control your breathing. It has to be as shallow as possible, because you can't just lie there with your chest sort of bulging up and down
as
you breathe.
They do it all with CGI now.
Oh, I'm sure they do it with the films, but I mean, if you're doing a theatre performance or a play.
If you're in the theatre, yes. I mean, you can't be breathing if you're on stage in front of an audience.
No, sir. How are you going to get around that?
Well, you'd have to learn, wouldn't you? You'd have to learn to hold your breath for however long you're on stage for.
Or you could go real method acting and just die. Just
yeah. But again, I think your roles after that first performance would be somewhat limited.
So have we got any viable options left on this list of something you could actually enjoy doing?
I think the last one might be the one for me.
What have we got?
Mooing.
Mooing?
Mooing. There's competitive mooing is a thing. Contests around rural locations, seems mainly in America and mainly around Wisconsin, apparently. People meet up and they move. I mean, they do this for other animals. Do you remember that? I think it was earlier this year, there was a kid won the seagull call competition, where you had to imitate a seagull. This is exactly that, where people gather and they have to moo, and the best mooers walk away with some sort of trophy.
Well, I hate to do it to you, Trevor. I wouldn't normally put you on the spot, but
I sang in front of a fucking ticket, obviously. Bear in mind, my shame bar is very low today.
You've put the noose around your own neck now. I'm going to ask you to give us your best moo.
When you say noose, I think you mean lasso. Prepare to be amazed.
Amused.
Mm-hmm. And the winner... Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, some recommendations for you. I've got a couple of things to recommend for you this week.
What have you got?
Well, to start with, talking of hobbies and finding things to do with your spare time, this is a programme... I'm not sure on the face of it you're going to think much of this programme, Ben.
Okay.
It's called James May and the Dull Men.
Okay, I like James May. I respect him. So go on. What's this about?
You know, online there's a lot of these like Dull Men Club sort of forums. Have you come across these?
This is new to me. I don't know.
Really? Maybe it says more about the things I search for online, because this pops up quite often in my Facebook feed, the Dull Men's Club. I've not joined it. I've not liked anything from it, but it pops up a lot. And it's things like... this is what came up on my feed recently. I heard stories about condensed milk turning into caramel here in Australia just by leaving it in the cupboard long enough. For the last 2 years, I've left a tin in the pantry. I've opened it. It's not turned to caramel. So he's done the work. He's put the time in. It hasn't done what he thought it was going to do. That's the Dull Men's Club. It's stuff like that.
Yeah, I find that kind of interesting, testing out these experiments. Wasn't there someone who put I think it was a McDonald's, it could have been a Burger King cheeseburger, under like a glass dome and just sort of had a live feed of it for years, and it never looked like it was going mouldy.
No, that's it. And it's stuff like that. So James May and the Dull Men, which is on Quest...
Bizarrely, that sounds really quite interesting, but I would be offended on your behalf if your Facebook feed is looking at you and the algorithm says, oh, dull man.
I know.
He'll love this.
I know. It's funny. It comes up a lot. And there's one I watched this week where James May talked about when he was 14 years old, he collected for about 6 months all of his toenail and fingernail cuttings, and he was going to try and turn that into glue. And then his mum threw away the cuttings because she thought that's disgusting. Why are you? So he finally got to do it. He finally gathered together enough bits of toenail cuttings and fingernail cuttings from his crew and went ahead and turned them into glue. And then you're on tenterhooks. You're thinking, well, is this going to work? How strong can this glue possibly... I'm not going to tell you because I'm not giving away any spoilers.
First of all, that is vile. I commend his mother for throwing that away. And
glue was made out of animal bones in the past, you know, and they still make fish glue. It's all sort of, you know, organic products, so why wouldn't it work?
Because, well, the other thing to bear in mind is once you start making toenail glue, it's a slippery slope before you're collecting belly button fluff and making some sort of pillow out of it. Honestly, no.
Well, there's an idea for the Dull Men's Club. Can you make a viable pillow from belly button fluff?
I mean, you'd need about 1,000 men for a decade to have a substantial pillow. And who would want to put their head on that pillow?
Well, look, if you've got enough people in the Dull Men's Club who can donate some belly... It's what I was saying to you earlier, Ben. If I phoned you up and said, can you provide me with some of your belly button fluff, I'm going to turn it into a pillow with a whole host of other people's. It would all be washed. It would all be sanitised. You could make a lovely... And then if you had enough... I mean, just for the outside, if you could actually weave the covering of the pillow, but it would also be the stuffing for the pillow. Everything that makes that pillow would be belly button fluff. Could that be done? I suspect yes. James May, get onto it.
I'm lost for words.
I think it's really good fun. Anyway, it's on Quest, which is on the, it's on your Freeview, it's on Sky, it's on wherever you can find it, and on Catch Up, of course. The other thing I'm going to recommend is a drama series that I watched recently on Netflix called Behind Her Eyes.
Okay.
It all starts when a single mum ends up entering a world of twisted mind games when she begins an affair with her psychiatrist boss. And I'm not going to give any spoilers away, but it goes off in a direction I didn't see coming at all.
Ooh, I'm intrigued.
I've spoken to a couple of people about this show, and they felt the direction it goes in didn't work. I thought it was very different. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's on Netflix. It's called Behind Her Eyes.
Lovely.
There we are. That's it. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime about anything. You know, if you want to send any dead pets, belly button fluff, toenail clippings, all to Ben Harmer, East Hampstead Postal Office Services, it'll get to him.
Whilst we're finishing off some final messages for the podcast, I would like to say, for the bastard that stole my Nectar Points, I hope you choked to death on your Christmas dinner. Fuck you.
Oh, the forgiving spirit of Christmas. Where poor old, probably Bob Cratchit, who's got Tiny Tim at home, just needs some sustenance. So
yes.
He tried his arm at the self-checkout counter and you've cursed him.
A turkey bone get lodged in your esophagus.
Unbelievable. Anyway, don't forget you can get in touch with us. We're at Trevor and Burn next, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.